We're in Exodus, finishing up the Ten Commandments, and particularly last week we kind of slowed down and went through on the Ten Commandments, kind of going through what those mean. I was told by Levi that I wasn't supposed to offend you guys because he really likes you. So I'm not sure how I'm going to pull this off. So. But I'll try not to offend you, because I like you guys too, a little bit. I've said hello. So, and I would have to say that for many, the truth of the Ten Commandments is offensive. And, you know, I'll bank on, you know, or fall back a little bit on, you know, the fact that Jesus oftentimes when he taught in the synagogue, it ended with them taking him out, trying to stone him, you know, doing it. So that might be one of the few characteristics I have in common with them, that people want to take me out and stone me. But we're on the commandment, do not commit adultery. And we've been talking about that because it's a very, very critical one in our culture. I would say that it's a place that the enemy has come in and is working to destroy our culture, working to destroy families, working to lead people away from God. I mean, it's what was the statistic I heard the other day, that in the classroom, in the average schoolroom, there's 70% of the kids are not living with their biological parents. You know, maybe one of them, but not both of them. I mean, it's a wreck. And that there's few things that are as destructive, as, you know, what do I say? I typically don't, put a lot of reserve on if I'm going to offend. So I know that I care about you guys and hope to build a friendship with you in long term, and, if I say something that's offensive, then I would ask you, please come back and go, what are you talking about? Or and at least don't write Levi off just because he's associated with me, okay, doing it. So, because typically you don't talk about sexuality in church, and do not commit adultery is has a lot to do with sexuality, right? I mean, we're not talking about, you know, don't eat pizza. So, what is God's purpose? We've talked the last couple weeks about what God's purpose is in marriage. Last week we talked about what God's heart was in marriage. Because obviously, what does it mean? Do not commit adultery. And it goes far beyond, don't just have an affair outside of marriage when you're married. It goes far beyond that. And so I think that In order for us to understand that, I mean, our purpose would be to be. So Jesus said that the one who has my commandments and keeps them, that's the one that loves me, in John 14:21. And the one that loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him, and I will disclose myself to him. All of us want God to reveal himself to us. I don't think there's anybody on the face of the earth that doesn't want God to reveal himself to us. How do we get to that point where God desires. It's not a matter of does God desire to reveal himself. He absolutely desires to reveal himself. He absolutely desires to have an intimate relationship with his creation, with the people that he created. That's proven without a shadow of a doubt in him giving us the hope of redemption through Jesus. I mean, Jesus died in our place so that we could have a relationship with God. So the fact that he desires to have an intimate relationship with us is, I would say, unquestionable. The issue becomes, how does that happen? And it happens, as Jesus said, he says, the one who has my commandments and keeps them, that's the one that loves me. You know, one of the important groundwork as far as thinking about dealing with some, you know, some kids, some people that I don't know and don't have a baseline with them in this next week. And how do you have any productive time in a week's time? And one of the important groundworks to lay, one of the essential groundworks to lay, is the biblical definition of love, right? Because again, what does it mean? The one who has my commandments and keeps them, that's the one that loves me. There is an irresistible, it's part of our flesh, it's part of religion, it's part of our culture. Our view of love is to like a really, really lot, okay? I mean, you can not like, you can like, you can like a lot, you can really like, you can really, really like, you can love, right? Isn't that the progression of it? That is not at all the progression that the Bible takes in defining the word agape, the Greek word agape for love. So that it's not that, it's not even in that progression that way. Is it wrong to really, really, really like God? No, that would be a really, really good thing, to have that relationship. Would it be right for me to really, really like Levi? Yeah, that would be a good thing. But I'm commanded to love him. I'm not commanded to like him. God says that I'm to work on our friendship and we're to work on having a relationship where we like each other because it makes it life a lot better and a lot easier. But we're commanded to love. So what does the word love mean? Because in talking, it's all wrapped up in that, right? Jesus said the entirety of the law, that means the Ten Commandments, all the law is wrapped up in this. To love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, right? So, unfortunately, I think that most people go through life thinking, how can I really like God a lot? I mean, I don't really know him. And so we tend to go to churches where people are really excited about it, where the worship is really good. So they get really excited about it. And they, because I want to feel really good about my relationship with God, because that would mean I really liked him. And if I can really work on that so that I really, really like him, then maybe I can love him. And then I can be obedient and I can love God. And that has nothing to do with the defined word. Again, the Greek word agape was an unused word basically in Greek. And I'm confident that the Spirit of God chose to inspire the writers of the New Testament to use that word so that it would be self-defined in this book. Okay? And it is. But that word would be, rather than like a lot or really lot or even like period, that word would be defined in the New Testament as submit to. Right? As regard is more important than yourself. That's what that word means. It doesn't mean that I like you a lot. It means that I am willing, that it's an action word that means I will submit to you. I will regard you as more important than yourself. I will be, probably more clearly defined, is I will be determined by you. I will be determined by you. If I'm commanded to love God. So this is the one who has my commandments and keeps them. That's the one that loves me. In other words, I am determined by what God says. I am determined by what God calls me to. I'm determined by God's commandments. Okay? That is loving him. That's what means love him. And when it comes to my neighbor or the people that God has put in my life, it means that the distinction between love and hate, the word misio, the distinction is that I will be determined by you. I will allow your life to have a determination in my life to be, you know, misio, the opposite of that. Hatred doesn't mean extreme animosity. What it means is that I will not be determined by you. Okay? In other words, I disregard you. And disregard your needs. And disregard your heart. And disregard who you are. That would be hatred. It's not extreme feelings of animosity. It's just a disregard for selfishness. Opposite of love. Okay? So love and hate, it is the same thing with God. We tend to think, everybody says, oh, I love Jesus, I love God. In other words, I don't have any really bad feelings towards either one of them. But that doesn't really have anything to do with it. If you, in a biblical definition, in biblical terms, if I am not determined by, if I disregard God and what he says, then I hate him. Then that's hatred. So, the critical thing is if we're going to be right with God, if we're going to have a right relationship with God, we need to do it as God calls us to do it. You know, if we don't believe in the divine inspiration of the Bible, if we don't believe in the absolute truthness of the Bible, if we don't believe in the absolute truth of the Bible, then we have a whole nother baseline to form. But if we believe that this is the inspired Word of God, mystical, magical, powerful, inspired Word of God, that is a book beyond. There is no book that even comes close to. This is where God defines Himself. This is where God says who I am. The first commandment you have no other gods before me. I will be the only God. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God that brought you out of Israel when He was setting the Ten Commandments. So the first one is, you will worship me as I have defined myself for who I am. Okay? So it's not subjective. We don't just get to make up God in our image. We do it all the time. And that's why we get a lot of help with it from the enemy of God. In making up gods in our image, in the way, one that serves us, one that doesn't offend us, one that goes along with how we would like Him to be. One that allows me to stay God and stay on the throne. And not necessarily be determined by what He says. But Jesus said, if we're going to please God, if we're going to know who God really is and the revelation of who God is, then we have to be determined by it. Then we have to love Him. Okay? And that doesn't, you know, we all want to have the feelings come first, right? When I really, really feel like it, then I will. When I feel really, really good about God, then I'll begin pursuing Him diligently on doing it. At the moment, I'm kind of apathetic about it and don't really care. God is still God. And the only way to have a right relationship with Him is to honor Him as God. Is He King? Is He Lord? Is He creator of the universe? Is there only one true and living God? Do we believe those things? Do we respond accordingly? So, we are not going to get to feign ignorance when we get to heaven. I think one of the issues that will be profoundly in our face is that everyone has the opportunity, pretty much everyone, because we're a very literate society, to read this, to see what this says, okay? Everyone here is somewhat literate. So to be able to read this and know what it says. So we're not going to stand before God and, I didn't know you said that. I didn't know you meant that. I didn't know that's what you called me to. We have a responsibility and the opportunity. I mean, it's one of the profound baselines of our culture, of this society that was created a couple hundred years ago, is that they wanted an education system where everyone could read. One of the main reasons for it was so they could read the Bible. They didn't want the Church of England or whatever, the Church of Rome, to tell them what God said. To tell them what God's heart was about things. They wanted the average person to be able to read. It was even used as a primary reading book in schools in original teaching and original schooling on doing it. So, and that's a profound thing that we have in this culture, is the opportunity and the ability to read what God says. So, when we read it, we have to decide what we're going to do with it. Are we going to love God? And again, that doesn't have much of anything to do with whether I like or not. You know, our calling to love is to regard others as more important. First God and other people. That's our calling to love. Okay? It's not to have strong feelings. Those are wonderful things. There's a different word for that. You know, the word is phileo, and that's friendship love. It's used in the Bible. on doing it. But agape love is a word that is defined again as to be determined by. So what does God say when he says, do not commit adultery? How are we going to stand and understand? God gave us his laws. Why? Because he was kind of an authoritative dictator that just wanted to put up rules and see if we followed them or not. And when we didn't, he'd crush us. I would say not. I would say God gave us his laws because he wanted us to have a right relationship with him. God gave us his laws because he wanted us to be in tune with him and have an intimate relationship with him. God gave us his law because he loves us. God gave us his laws. It's not because he is distant or authoritative or just wanted to make a bunch of laws so you wouldn't, you know, I'm going to put a fence around my place and no trespassing signs up. This is what it is because I don't want to be bothered by you stinking people. That's not God's heart. God's heart is, I want to have an intimate relationship with you. And this is what it looks like to have an intimate relationship with me. And God also knows, and this is something that's also very, very important for us to understand. God created us in the beginning. I think most of us believe that, right? God created humans. He created Adam and Eve, right? And when God created him, he created him with a certain character, okay? He created him to be fulfilled, to be happy, to be content, to be secure in a right relationship with him. And sin entered the world, okay? Sin, rebellion towards God, missing the mark is what it means, but it's not just mistakes. It is willfully missing the mark. And as a result of that, everything went sideways. Security, happiness, contentment, peace, joy, all those things that God created us to have and to live in become very elusive and something that we go after hard. There's only one way for that to be complete, for those things to be real in our lives, and that's to be in tune and have a right relationship with God. It doesn't happen any other way. We can try to fill it with everything, you know. And it's somewhat fun to try at times. But it's empty and leaves you empty. A pacifier is a pacifier, you know. And the only way to true fulfillment and joy and happiness and security and peace is to be in a right relationship with God. That's why God gives us laws, to tell us his heart, to protect us, because he loves us as our children. No different than I say, tell my children, do not go play in the street. Well, I don't necessarily, because nobody on my street, so they ride the bicycles in the street all the time, okay? So, that's okay. But, if it's a busy street, you say, don't play in the busy street, right? Look before you walk out in the middle of the street. They're not teaching that very often these days, are they? No, it's a bad deal. It's a sign of rebellion of youth. It's the most amazing thing. I just want to honk my horn and run over them. You know, doing it. It's so bad. The youth these days, they just brazenly don't even look. Just look at this. I can control everybody around me. Stop. Stop all these cars. What a power thing I've got right here. You know, doing it. It's terrible. Okay, you stinking brats, man. Just complete disregard and disrespect. But in most countries, they wouldn't do that because they would get run over. But in ours, we're, you know, we believe that we feel way better ourselves because we slam the brakes on and cause the guy in back to run into us and cause a crash and all those things that would happen in the process. But we feel better about ourselves because we stopped for a pedestrian. It's a sad world we live in. So anyway, but what's that? One of my pet peeves? Yeah. It's not that I necessarily don't regard pedestrians. It's just disrespect is a terrible, terrible part of youth. We don't want to be told what to do. We want to control. We want to. God gave us his laws. He gave us in stop signs. We put a stop sign up so we don't have crashes, right? We put, you know, speeding signs up so that people don't drive over their heads and cause less wrecks. Laws are there for our protection. In God's, they're perfect laws there for our protection. When he said do not commit adultery, it wasn't that he didn't understand the rush of sinful behavior or that stolen water is sweet as Proverbs says. He understands that, right? He knows that, you know, when a marriage is dragging and a marriage is lagging and it becomes mundane or routine, and, you know, there's some of us that don't like life that way. Some do, but some don't, okay? I happen to be one of them, you know. I want to twist the throttle and hold it there for a little bit, you know, because then it makes the world go away. Life gets way better. Life's good, right? I'm excited. Dude, I'm not one to want to be cautious about life. So when life seems really mundane, you know, the temptation in our culture is, well, have an affair. You know, we've been told that. God said it will be destructive and destroy your soul. And it goes far beyond, as we talked about, it goes far beyond just the outward act of having it. Because one of the things that we aren't willing to give up is the inside. And that's where it becomes, in our culture, particularly controversial. In Matthew 5, we talked about it, okay? And my hope and my desire is to go, what is the hope? Because unfortunately we're held captive. In Matthew 5, again, Jesus said, and I would cause us all to continually refer back here, because this is Jesus' heart, right? And we can say, well, I don't care what Jesus said. All right. But that's a whole different story we can talk about. If you care about what Jesus said, this is Jesus talking on the Sermon on the Mount, when he was up there telling what this would look like, what people under his authority as King Jesus would be. He says, you have heard that it was said you shall not commit adultery. That's the Exodus 10 commandments that we're on, that he's quoting. You've heard that it said you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks on a woman to lust for her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you that one of the parts of your body perish than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. For it is better for you that one of the parts of your body perish than for your whole body to go into hell. But I don't know that it could get more direct or more powerful on that, right? It isn't just a matter of having an affair with somebody next door. It is a matter of thinking lustfully in your heart about anyone besides your spouse. Okay? And that seems a little bit, Sharia law or something, doesn't it? Seems a little extreme, you know, that's what Jesus says. Okay? That's what Jesus says. And the problem is that all men, and pretty much all women, I would say, but some of you might fight me, struggle with that. Okay? Always have. Grow up struggling with it. Never dealt with it. Okay? It's something that, in fact, we're encouraged to do. We're encouraged to think sexually about each other as kids. To be sexual with each other as kids. To tease and toy and play with sexuality as kids doing it growing up. So that is a conditioned response we have from a very young age in our culture in doing it. That we condition our minds that is not only okay, but that's a good thing that we do that on it. But he looks so, look at that little thing. It's growing up. And unfortunately, by the time we get married, it's a pretty conditioned part of our character and part of our soul. And it doesn't go away. You know? I mean, the ability to sin. As Jesus said, committing adultery is not just about having that outward affair. It's about the state of our hearts. And are we at one with the image that God has is marriage. Marriage is something that he created to reflect our relationship with him. Okay? The marriage relationship is something that God, that's why he guards it so carefully. That's why he is so severe in his view of it. It is a relationship that is supposed to reflect our relationship with Him. And as Jesus said, that the marriage relationship at this point reflects the church's relationship with Jesus. Okay? That's why purity is so critical to Him. Because we're not to worship other gods. We're not to be adulterous. And as a church, we're not to be adulterous. We only have a single affair, relationship, marriage with Jesus, with the Jesus of this Bible, with the God of this Bible. We're not to have other idols. We're not to have any other gods before us. And it's something that He's very jealous as a God. He says, I'm a jealous God. And the marriage relationship is supposed to set that example, set that baseline, and reflect that on doing it. That's why He is so careful about it. And the weakness in it is that the church has utterly failed to express the fact that holiness is the greatest aphrodisiac. That purity is the greatest aphrodisiac. You know? And most of us have no idea what that even means. Because most of us have grown up with defiled, going into our marriages, defiling our marriage beds, and still live in that state and don't ever know. So it becomes mundane, routine, and mechanical, and non-exciting, and, you know. I mean, there was a day when your wife took her clothes off, and man, it was on, right? I mean, yeah, there's, you know, life's really exciting. Now she takes her clothes off every night, and you kind of go, I'm not saying that's the case. I still, it's on, you know, okay? It's good. The truth is that at this point, it's interesting to watch in doing it, because this is a process that I don't just stand from a teaching standpoint. This is obviously a process that I stand from a subjective point of view too, and understanding, because my wife and I, in 41 years of marriage, 48 years of relationship, have been through the mess in trying to get to a point where it was as God intended it to be, okay? And that's been an ugly struggle. And to watch that process in the biblical truths be real in our lives, I mean, you know, as I've said before, and I say, but by the grace of God, but by the goodness of God, but by the living out the truths of God, sexuality is better than it's ever been. And I'm really old, okay? So I know all you young people think, come on, you know, can't be. No, yeah, it is. It's still good. The amazing thing is that intimacy now is so much predicated on what our relation. There is nobody else. There is to be nobody else. There is no, you know, we have purified our marriage bed to the point, you know, where we have fought that fight that the enemy has brought in, that the enemy held us in. It just about destroyed our marriage, just about destroyed our children and our families. And we began to fight that, you know, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years ago. Hard. So what is God's heart on marriage, and what should it look like? And the amazing thing is, you watch that grow. I am living proof. It's better than I ever thought it could be. And by all standards, it was done. I mean, it was ugly and nasty and over. And that would look a lot different right now, right? But by the grace of God and the goodness of God, the truths of God living out, that's it. The problem is that most of us in this, and I'm trying to be nice and careful, I'm not doing it, so go ahead. Okay. We'll see. Okay. I mean, he rides a 450 Husky. He's got to have, you know, some goes, all right? I mean, the problem is that most of us think that that's just the way it is. I mean, the statement is always said, that's just the way men are. I mean, even within the church, you know, men look at women sexually. That's just the way men are. That's not the way God intended it to be. Can it be different than that? Can we win on that? Because honestly, looking at a woman sexually is rebellion to God. In continuing to hold on to that rush and that perk and that excitement and that little bit of nudge, that little bit of whatever that gives us. You know, no different than women, you know. Why do you care how you... dressing in a respectable way is good. Dressing in a sexual way is a whole different world. You know? Well, I'm not intending on having an affair, but that look, that second look, you know, really kind of sparks you a little bit, kind of gives you a little adrenaline rush, kind of makes you feel a little better. And to tease and toy with that, this seems like that's just the way we are. And in our culture, we're sexually enraged. We're sexually perverse. That one of the reasons why there is basically no satiation, no satisfaction in sexuality is because immorality is unsatisfiable. It's unsatiable. Sex outside of what God says is not satiable. It's just progressively more and more and more and more and more without any ability to be satiating, without any ability to be fulfilling, truly fulfilling. Again, most of us went through the process of sexuality that you know, for the our whole time growing up, an orgasm was absolutely shattered with guilt and shame and embarrassment and push away and secrecy and quiet and do it. All kinds of completely wrong endings. Okay? I mean, the best part of sexuality should be after. And it doesn't mean smoking a cigarette, okay? And the best part of sexuality afterwards should be satisfaction, a satiation, a fulfillment, a contentment, a peace, a joy, no guilt, no shame. But we all grew up in a whole different world. And unfortunately, like I said before, I think the church is one of the greatest culprits of that hypocrisy, of creating that hypocrisy. What is hypocrisy? I mean, of all the things that, when you read by the way, hypocrite is a word that Jesus used, okay? Hypocrisy is a word that Jesus used. In fact, he's the only one that used it in the New Testament. He used it quite a bit. And again, I would say that he self-defined it. What does the word mean? Actually, it means an actor. Okay? That's what the Greek word means. It means an actor. So why was he so upset about an actor? Did he just hate Hollywood or something? You know, why was Jesus so violent? Because the only thing that he was truly that made him very angry and he came hard against was hypocrisy. He hated hypocrisy, right? What he defined as hypocrisy. What was that? That was religious people that had all the appearance of holiness and purity, but their hearts weren't there. But their hearts were not, their hearts were covered up. And what do you call them? Whitewashed tombs, right? Call them whitewashed tombs full of dead things inside. Not alive, not from the inside out. He said, it's not what goes into a man. You guys are so consumed with what goes into a man defiles him. He says, that's what comes out of a man. It's what the state of his soul is what defiles a man. It's not the religious act on the outsides and all the things you do on the outside. But unfortunately, what we do with sexuality and growing up with addiction and bondage to lust and masturbation, what we do is we compartmentalize that. We say, that's not really who I am. That's not really what I am. You know? I'm not one of those guys. I mean, come on. And yet, all that is still in baggage. And in church, what do we want to be? We want to be right with God. Is, you know, some level why most people go to church for some reason, just because they want to be right with God on some level. So what does it mean to be right with God? So we start trying really hard while we're still living in utter rebellion to what God called us to. And whenever we want, we can choose to be God. And whenever I want, I can take that box down. And I can excite it, play with it, back on the shelf, at my leisure, at my choice. And we spend our lives doing that to the point, and unfortunately, within the church, some of the most rabid, devout people come from this insatiable desire to be right in spite of this complete duality and hypocrisy. Jesus hated it. Jesus hated it. I hate it. I hate it. We need to, the only hope for sin in our lives, the only hope for bondage in our lives, the only hope to be set free in our lives, is to agree with God about our sin. Okay? It's not burying it deep. It's not putting it under the rug. It's not putting it in a box on the shelf. It's being willing to turn lights on. God, how do you see things? I'm willing to look at it for what it is. To agree with God about what it is what confession means, right? Confession means that I agree with God about my sin. Repentance means that I'm willing to turn away from it because God says it's wrong. And if I'm going to love God, if I'm going to have a relationship with God, not a hate relationship, but a love relationship with God, that means I need to be determined by Him and what He says about it. So, are we willing, have we been willing to bring it down, take the box, turn the lights on whatever? And let me put this out there because this is really important. Because one of the great problems in the struggle, I would say maybe the greatest problem in the struggle becomes this, is that what we don't want to give up is the like of it. Okay? Okay, I'm going to white knuckle it. I'm not going to do that. But man, I really want to. But man, I'd really like to. But man, it really looks like fun to me. But that's something but I'm not going to because it's wrong. I can't do that. Do you realize that that is rebellion in God's heart? That is rebellion towards God, because that's disagreeing with how God feels about it. If God says this is utter wickedness and will destroy you, if God says for you to think about my daughters that way puts me in big conflict with you, and understand that. These are God's daughters. To think sexually when we have no right is exploitative. Is wrong, is wicked. No different than if you know, somebody was lusting after, even my daughter, her husband can lust after, but anybody else, we're not okay. We're not good, okay? This isn't okay that you're thinking sexually about my daughter. That God intended that to be within the confines of marriage, and meant it to be exalted and euphoric and wondrous and orgasmic in marriage. Outside of marriage, not to be. Why? Because he wants to hold that sanctity and that sacredness that has no guilt, no shame within the confines of marriage and is wondrous as he intended it to be. Is a welding, bonding force of two souls that he intended it to be. And anything that you do to diminish that takes away from its value and ability to bring oneness, to bring intimacy. With nothing between us. And God uses the same word, koinonia, uses that same intimacy, becoming one. He uses that for sexuality, and he uses that for our relationship with him. Becoming one. Where we are bound together with nothing, not guilt, not shame, not sin, not rebellion between us. And that's what God's heart is for us in the marriage. What do we do though? Because unfortunately, the enemy is pretty good about getting us in bondage to it and think, well, there's no hope. There's nothing I can do about it. How can I not look at that girl when she's hanging her boobs out and not think sexually? I don't know. How do you do that, man? How do you make that happen? You know? And I don't blame her. I want to beat her dad. But, you know, it's not a condemnation. But where's your daddy? You know? Didn't daddy teach you not to dress like that or act like that or do that? Obviously not. I'm doing it. That's not okay, that's going to bring attention really that you don't want in doing it. So what can we do? And I guess that's why my hope was to move on to the next commandment, okay? So God says there is hope, that we can be literally set free, okay? Number one is we have to be willing to be obedient. And I would encourage you all to consider the fact that obedience isn't just a matter of white knuckling, I'm not going to do this anymore. Obedience is a matter, I am willing to give up my love of sin in my heart I'm willing to let you change my heart, God. Because we're talking about supernatural stuff. We're talking about the Spirit of God. We're talking about the reality of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the most powerful entity on the face of the, in the universe, of the Creator of the universe. We're talking about Him coming in and redeeming us and renewing our minds and changing us. Are we willing to let Him do that? Or do we want to hold on to it? Do I want to hold on to my like for sin? Because that's where it really comes. You know, if I continue to go, man, I really want to. And I don't want you to take that away because that's always been something that's pretty precious to me, God. Or am I willing to go, God, I'm willing to let me see it as you see it. How does God see it? God sees that woman acting sexually and sees her as a daughter. Wants to put his arms around her and give her a coat and say, honey, you know, let me guard and protect you from stinking predators around here. That I see a little girl, right? I mean, it is not most of us, I would hope, all of us, have not degenerated to the point, because sin is degenerative, sexual immorality is degenerative, not degenerative to the point where we look at a little girl and go, God, well, it's kind of sexual, right? No, what's our first intention? Guard, protect, right? We don't go there. And anybody who would consider that is in danger of death. Or something real close to it, okay? And because that's sacred ground, you would never do that. That's wicked. That's evil. It's no different. It's no different. For an adult woman, adult man, it's no different. Are we willing to let God change our hearts? So that my response is not wanting to think and get that little rush and what would that be like or whatever it might be that goes through your head. Instead, it's, you're God's daughter and I love you. You're God's son. You are not my husband, so you're somebody else's husband. You're not my wife, so you're going to be somebody else's wife. It's all right for me to look at my wife and get that little tingle or tease or toy or think or let my mind run even a little. That's okay, you know. It's me and her, you know, and that's good. But outside of that confines, it's absolutely wrong. What do we do about that? Because we think we're in bondage to it. We think we have no choice. And the truth is, here's the truth of it, you don't, outside of the power of God. You don't. You don't have the ability to love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. You don't have the ability to love your neighbor as yourself. We don't have a choice outside the power of God, the redeeming supernatural power of God in our lives. We don't have the ability to be obedient to God. We're fleshly, selfish people. Who's number one? Me in my flesh. I mean, I can cover that up all kinds of ways. I can be number one as the most philanthropic or the most charitable or the most charitable working person there is. But I'm number one. When it comes down to bottom line, if God is not God, then I consider myself to be the one in authority, the one in charge, the one ultimately makes the decisions and the best decisions. I don't really have a choice in that. But where does it go different? Romans chapter 6. Follow with me here and then we'll end. So Romans chapter 6, because this is the great hope. This is Paul explaining the great hope we have of being set free, of living in the way that God intended us to be. In the garden, naked and unashamed. I wish we had Garden of Eden anymore. We don't, but we have neighbors. But living in the garden, naked and unashamed, picking fruit, in complete intimate relationship with God. That's what God desires still. God desires that we have an intimate, fulfilling, complete relationship with Him. That's what He longs for. And that can happen. He made a way for that to happen. Sin entered the world, what did they do? They put fig leaves on and tried to cover their nakedness. Okay? Because of guilt and because of shame that comes in with sin on doing it. Okay? And God desires for us to be in a right relationship with Him. Chapter 6. Because here we're talking about this struggle between the natural man, the flesh man, okay, and my desire to have a relationship with God. So here you see the foundation of all religion. How does your religion explain to you how to be right with God in the midst of this conflict? Okay? Some would say, well, you do more good than bad. Some would say, really important you try to do more good in this life than bad, otherwise you don't progress very quickly. You know, you're gonna have to come back as something else and try again. Others, you know, even among, in Christendom, it's about, well, I need to make sure I outweigh the bad with the good. I need to do what pleases God. I need to please God in order for Him to have a right relationship with Him, in order for Him to love me. Comes from a lot of daddy issues of love based on performance and, you know, conditional love. God's love is not conditional. God's love is unconditional. But the only way to be in an intimate relationship in spite of that unconditional love, because unconditional love does not mean that He overlooks sin. That would be one of the most tragic perceptions we could ever have. Because that would be spitting in Jesus' face on the cross. God did not overlook sin. God killed Jesus in our place. God did not soften in His Old Testament harshness, striking people dead and whatnot, you know? Opening the earth and swallowing them up and all those things that that harsh God did. Now He's a nice God. No, He killed Jesus so that we could be right and have a relationship with Him. And that's our hope. What does that look like? What should we say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace might increase? Because it is by the grace of God. His grace is met. You know, I am here by the grace of God. And that's not a cutesy little statement. That's reality. Okay? May it never be. How shall we who have died to sin still live in it? Or do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus have been baptized into His death? Now, stop for a minute. Getting dunked in water has little to nothing to do with this, okay? This is not about dunking you in water. Okay? Baptized means full immersion into. Okay? How do you be baptized into His death? I mean, you're gonna go in a hole where dead people are or something? I mean, what is that? No, that's not what it means. It means full immersion into. Okay? And it says, how have you who have been baptized into death, okay, have been, therefore, we have been buried with Him, our flesh. In other words, okay, you can go back to the simple part, I am commanded to love God. I am going to die to myself and allow God to determine me. That's loving God, okay? I am going to be determined by what God says, not by what I say. All of those who have been buried with Him through baptism into death, in order that as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so too we might walk in newness of life. You want to be set free? For if we have become united with Him in the likeness of His death, certainly we shall also in the likeness of His resurrection. Knowing this, that our old self was crucified with Him. He said to take up your cross daily, that I am willing to die to myself. Now, does that mean stabbing myself with a knife or hanging myself on a cross? No. That means from the depth of my soul, I am willing to die to myself. And that's not just in my own, I'm going to be a masochist, I'm going to be self-abusive. I mean, there's all kinds of weird incantations that have happened out of this, right? People think they, you know, over the centuries, people think that self-abuse and things, this somehow will please God because I am, no. It's a matter of, I am willing to relinquish my will to the authority of God. Okay? For if we have become united with Him in the likeness of His death, certainly we shall also be in the likeness of His resurrection, knowing this, that our old self was crucified with Him, and that our body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin. For he who died is freed from sin. Now if we have died with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with Him. knowing that Christ, having been raised from the dead, is never to die again. Death no longer is master over him. For the death that he died for sin once for all. But the life he lives to God. For so, even so, consider yourselves to be dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus. So we're talking about sexual sin here. We're talking about do not commit adultery. What is God's heart here? Read these next verses. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body, that you should obey its lust. And do not go on presenting the members of your body. Members means limbs, means parts. He's talking about your body, your physical body. Do not go on presenting the members of your body, and probably certain limbs too, okay? I mean, he's talking about the physical part. That's what the word is. It means physical parts of your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness. But present yourselves to God as those alive from the dead and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. So, first we have to understand and be willing to look at how does God see sexuality. Again, one of the great weaknesses in the church is we have not extolled the fact that God created sexuality. He is the designer and creator of sexual orgasm. I mean, that's a... Who thought of that? God? It's a pretty God thing, I think. Doing it. I mean, it's an amazing, unbelievable, most powerful physiological thing we know. God designed it. God created it. God intended it to be so, without encumbrance, without hindrance, without guilt, without shame, to live, to weld two souls together in intimacy. But that's not the way most marriages look. That's not the way most relationships look. Because the enemy has said, has stolen the ground and says, eroticism is my home. That's my ground. That's my power. That's what I own. Church sex, Christian sex, pure sex, that's just kind of boring. Making children, procreation. Okay? That's a life in the pit of hell. God is the designer of sexuality. He's the designer of eroticism. He's a designer of orgasm. He created our bodies and our minds and our eyes to do what they do and to look the way they are and to be excited in the way that he intended them to look, okay? And the enemy has stolen that ground, and we have not. I'm convinced that the reason it has not been screamed in the church, or not been spoken truthfully in the church is because there's too many men living in guilt and shame that don't know what purity looks like, and their own marriages suck and don't know it. You know? I mean, it's a mess. You know, I remember some of the first wrecks we had in this when God called us back to come here years ago before I got asked to cause trouble and be the shepherd was there was a couple of the elders that openly and willingly said, oh, I haven't had sex with my wife in 25 years and that's okay. And I lost it. Are you kidding me? That is not okay. You know? Particularly since I happen to know that the reason you haven't is because your wife's a mess sexually because she was abused sexually and you've never done anything to heal her. You've never done anything to bring her into healing. And you're living in a marriage? God did not intend to have a marriage of that sexuality. It would be the extremely, extremely weird exception. Okay? He meant marriage. That's a part that he created and designed it for. That is where it's meant to be. That is what we need to teach our children. It's not a toy for you to play with. It's not something for you to take lightly. It's not something for you to exploit at your own pleasure. It's not just a button for you to be able to push whenever you want to feel better for a moment on doing it. This is something that God intended to flourish and be wondrous in the context of marriage. And outside of that, it will destroy you. And destroy your soul, and destroy your marriage, and destroy your children. Because God didn't intend for it to be outside of that. He created this unbelievable, I mean, dynamite is, dynamite and orgasm, they're kind of comparable, right? I mean, and dynamite is a wondrous thing. In the right place, right? But in the wrong place, it's not so good. In the wrong place, it can wreak havoc and destruction and devastation. Same thing. Are we going to do it as God intended us to do it? He gives us the authority and the ability to come against the bondage that the enemy works so hard to put us into at a very young age, to take us into our marriages in, and most people never escape from that. Most people's sexuality sucks in marriage. Okay? And it's a best a foreshadow of what should be and could be, because it's not done God's way. It's not willing to see things from God's perspective. So. And that is something for a single person just to look forward to. Let's pray. God, I thank you that you are not a hypocrite. I thank you that you long to have us walk in the light. As you're in the light, and in you there's no darkness. That's what you call us to, and that we can live in a right relationship with you and be free. Free to dance. Free to live. Without bondage, without baggage, without hidden doors locked away. Because we can be set free. I thank you for the unbelievably wondrous thing that is, that we can be right with our daddy. It's like a little kid who lied to their dad, and the way that it set their relationship on edge and non-intimate and distant and divides us. And that's a terrible thing, that we can live with our dad without any hidden sin, without any hidden rebellion. And I thank you for giving us that hope and that ability and that grace in the process, your unmerited favor towards us, where you continue to beckon us, you continue to call us, you continue to draw us and draw us to you. You continue to want to pull us in spite of our rebellion and flipping you off and not acknowledging you for who you are. I thank you for your willingness to be long-suffering and patient and continue to draw us to yourself. God, I ask that you would cause us all to try to evaluate our minds, our thoughts, our culture, our world around us in light of what your heart is. To realize that we have degenerated and gone so far. And that is only to our destruction and our devastation and that of our children. If we have hope for our children, if we have hope for the next generation of children growing up, then we will do it your way and we will teach them your ways. Because that's the only right way, in spite of what our culture might be saying. I thank you again for your mercy and your grace. And Jesus, we owe it all to you. We owe it all to you, and I thank you for that. I thank you that you paid it all, that we do not have to earn your favor. The only thing you ask is that we respond to you according to your character and nature that you revealed yourself to be. That's an amazing thing. Amen.